Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Welcome to the special 6-year anniversary episode of Simultaneous Times, a collaboration with Worlds of If magazine to bring you works from the pages of Worlds of If number 177. Learn more at worldsofifmagazine.com. Contact by Akua Leslie Hope, with music by Fall Precautions, read by the author.
Why are your life bearers not your prime decisioners? The beloved asked us. Where are your priestess mages, your doctor seers, your doula sages? They were speaking our language and struggling with our flat cultures. Why were we made sterile for this voyage? Couldn't we hold our fertilized eggs until ready to grow and birth? Couldn't our empty men assist with the carrying? It takes the BBs more than an earth year, like African elephants and the sperm whales they resemble, fluid-filled square heads, resonant with light, radiant with understanding, redolent with psychotropic scent, actuating aromas to co-create their supple, ready, glistening young. They struggled with our simple, reductive linearity, being polite, exceedingly, it seemed, perhaps trying to hide their shock and possible faint revulsion, speaking as simply, as slowly as they could, peering down the bundled constructs of their multivariate consciousness, accommodating the profound disabilities of our youth and our stunning uncompassion.
The Pain Peddlers by Robert Silverberg, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Pain is gain. Greek proverb. The phone bleeped. Northrop nudged the cut-in switch and heard Murillo say, "We got a gangrene, Chief. They're amputating tonight." Northrop's pulse quickened at the thought of action. "What's the tab?" he asked. 5,000. All rights. "Anesthetic?" "Natch," Murillo said. "I tried it the other way." "What did you offer?" 10. It was a no-go. Northrop sighed. "I'll have to handle it myself, I guess. Where's the patient?" "Clinton General, in the wards." Northrop raised a heavy eyebrow and glowered into the screen. "In the wards?" he bellowed. "And you couldn't get them to agree?" Murillo seemed to shrink. It was the relatives, Chief. They were stubborn. The old man, he didn't seem to give a damn, but the relatives? "Okay, you stay there. I'm coming over to close the deal," Northrop snapped. He cut the phone out and pulled a couple of blank waiver forms out of his desk, just in case the relatives backed down. Gangrene was gangrene, but 10 grand was 10 grand, and business was business. The networks were yelling. He had to supply the goods or get out. He thumbed the auto secretary. "I want my car ready in 30 seconds, South Street exit." "Yes, Mr. Northrop." "If anyone calls for me in the next half hour, record it. I'm going to Clinton General Hospital, but I don't want to be called there." "Yes, Mr. Northrop." "If Rayfield calls from the network office, tell him I'm getting him a dandy. Tell him, oh, hell, tell him I'll call him back in an hour. That's all." "Yes, Mr. Northrop." Northrop scowled at the machine and left his office. The grav shaft took him down 40 stories in almost literally no time flat. His car was waiting, as ordered, a long, sleek 08 Frontiac with bubble top. Bulletproof, of course. Network producers were vulnerable to crackpot attacks. He sat back, nestling into the plush upholstery. The car asked him where he was going, and he answered. "Let's have a pep pill," he said. A pill rolled out of the dispenser in front of him. He gulped it down. "Mario, you make me sick," he thought. "Why can't you close a deal without me, just once?" He made a mental note. Mario had to go. The organization couldn't tolerate inefficiency. The hospital was an old one. It was housed in one of the vulgar green glass architectural monstrosities so popular 60 years before. A tasteless, slab-sided thing without character or grace. The main door irised and Northrop stepped through, and the familiar hospital smell hit his nostrils. Most people found it unpleasant, but not Northrop. It smelled of dollars for him. The hospital was so old that it still had nurses and orderlies. Oh, plenty of mechanicals skittered up and down the corridors, but here and there, a middle-aged nurse, smugly clinging to her tenure, pushed a tray of mush along, or a doddering orderly propelled a broom. In his early days on video, Northrop had done a documentary on these people, these living fossils in the hospital corridors. He had won an award for the film, with its cross-cuts from baggy-faced nurses to gleaming mechanicals, its vivid presentation of the inhumanity of the new hospitals. It was a long time since Northrop had done a documentary of that sort. A new kind of show was the order of the day now, ever since the intensifiers had come in. A mechanical took him to Ward 7. Maria was waiting there, a short, bouncy little man who wasn't bouncing much now, because he knew he had fumbled. Mario grinned up at Northrop, a hollow grin, and said, "You sure made it fast, Chief." "How long would it take for the competition to cut in?" Northrop countered. "Where's the patient?" "Down by the end. You see where the curtain is?" "I had the curtain put up, to get in good with the heirs, the relatives, I mean." "Fill me in," Northrop said. "Who's in charge?" "The oldest son, Harry. Watch out for him, greedy." "Who isn't?" Northrop sighed. They were at the curtain now. Mario parted it. All through the long ward, patients were stirring. Potential subjects for taping, all of them, Northrop thought. The world was so full of different kinds of sickness, and one sickness fed on another. He stepped through the curtain. There was a man in the bed, drawn and gaunt, his hollow face greenish, stubbly. A mechanical stood next to the bed, with an intravenous tube running across and under the covers. The patient looked at least 90. Knocking off 10 years for the effects of illness still made him pretty old, Northrop thought. He confronted the relatives. There were 8 of them, 5 women, ranging from middle age down to teens. 3 men, the oldest about 50, the other 2 in their 40s. Sons and daughters and nieces and granddaughters, Northrop figured. He said gravely, "I know what a terrible tragedy this must be for all of you. A man in the prime of his life, head of a happy family." Northrop stared at the patient. "But I know he'll pull through. I see the strength in him." The oldest relative said, "I'm Harry Gardner. I'm his son. You're from the network?" "I'm the producer," Northrop said. I don't ordinarily come in person, but my assistant told me what a great human situation there was here. What a brave person your father is. The man in the bed slept on. He looked bad. Harry Gardner said, "We made an arrangement, $5,000. We wouldn't do it except for the hospital bills. They can really wreck you." "I understand perfectly," Northrop said in his most unctuous tones. "That's why we're prepared to raise our offer. We're well aware of the disastrous effects of hospitalization on a small family, even today, in these times of protection. And so we can offer..." "No, there's got to be anesthetic." It was one of the daughters, a round, drab woman with colorless, thin lips. "We ain't going to let you make him suffer." Northrop smiled. "It would only be a moment of pain for him, believe me. We begin the anesthesia immediately after the amputation. Just let us capture that single instant of..." "It ain't right, he's old. He's got to be given the best treatment. The pain could kill him." "On the contrary," Northrop said blandly. "Scientific research has shown that pain is often beneficial in amputation cases. It creates a nerve block, you see, that causes a kind of anesthesia of its own, without the harmful side effects of chemotherapy. And once the danger vectors are controlled, the normal anesthetic procedures can be evoked and..." He took a deep breath and went rolling glibly on to the crusher. "With the extra fee we'll provide, you can give your dear one the absolute finest in medical care. There'll be no reason to stint." Weary glances were exchanged. Harry Gardner said, "How much are you offering?" "May I see the leg?" Northrop countered. The coverlet was peered back. Northrop stared. It was a nasty case. Northrop was no doctor, but he had been in this line of work for 5 years, and that was long enough to give him an amateur acquaintance with disease. He knew the old man was in bad shape. It looked as though there had been a severe burn, high up along the calf, which had probably been treated only with first aid. Then, in happy proletarian ignorance, the family had let the old man rot until he was gangrenous. Now the leg was blackened, glossy, and swollen from mid-calf to the ends of the toes. Everything looked soft and decayed. Northrop had the feeling that he could reach out and break the puffy toes off, one at a time. The patient wasn't going to survive. Amputation or not, he was probably rotten to the core by this time. And if the shock of amputation didn't do him in, general debilitation would. It was a good prospect for the show. It was the kind of stomach-turning, vicarious suffering that millions of viewers gobbled up vividly. Northrop looked up and said, $15,000 if you allow a network-approved surgeon to amputate under our conditions. And we'll pay the surgeon's fee besides." "Well?" "And we'll also underwrite the entire cost of post-operative care for your father," Northrop added smoothly. "Even if he stays in the hospital for 6 months, we'll pay every nickel over and above the telecast fee." He had them. He could see the greed shining in their eyes. They were faced with bankruptcy, and he had come to rescue them. And did it matter all that much if the old man didn't have anesthetic when they sawed his leg off? He was hardly conscious even now. He wouldn't really feel a thing. Not really. Northrop produced the documents, the waivers, the contracts covering residuals and Latin American reruns, the payment vouchers, all the paraphernalia. He sent Murillo scuttling off for his secretary, and a few minutes later, a glistening mechanical was taking it all down. "If you'll put your name here, Mr. Gardner." Northrop handed the pen to the oldest son. "Signed, sealed, delivered." "We'll operate tonight," Northrop said. "I'll send our surgeon over immediately, one of our best men. We'll give your father the care he deserves." He pocketed the documents. It was done. Maybe it was barbaric to operate on an old man that way, Northrop thought. But he didn't bear the responsibility, after all. He was just giving the public what it wanted. And the public wanted spouting blood and tortured nerves. And what did it matter to the old man, really? Any experienced medic could tell you he was as good as dead. The operation wouldn't save him, Anesthesia wouldn't save him. If the gangrene didn't get him, post-operative shock would do him in. At worst, he would suffer only a few minutes under the knife, but at least his family would be free from the fear of financial ruin. On the way out, Murillo said, "Do you think it's a little risky, Chief, offering to pay the hospitalization expenses, I mean? You've got to gamble a little sometimes to get what you want," Northrop said. "Yeah, but that could run 50, 60,000. What'll that do to the budget?" Northrop shrugged. "We'll survive, which is more than the old man will. He can't make it through the night. We haven't risked a penny, Mario. Not a stinking cent." Returning to the office, Northrop turned the papers on the Gardner amputation over to his assistants, set the wheels in motion for the show, and prepared to call it a day. There was only one bit of dirty work left to do. He had to fire Murillo. It wasn't called firing, of course. Murillo had tenure, just like the hospital orderlies and everyone else below executive rank. It was more of a demotion than anything else. Northrop had been increasingly dissatisfied with the little man's work for months now, and today had been the clincher. Murillo had no imagination. He didn't know how to close a deal. Why hadn't he thought of underwriting the hospitalization? "If I can't delegate responsibility to him," Northrop told himself, "I can't use him at all." There were plenty of other assistant producers in the outfit who'd be glad to step in. Northrop spoke to a couple of them. He made his choice. A young fellow named Barton, who'd been working on documentaries all year. Barton had done the plane crash deal in London in the spring. He had a fine touch for the gruesome. He'd been on hand at the World's Fair fire last year in Juneau. Yes, Barton was the man. The next part was the sticky one. Northrop phoned Murillo, even though Murillo was only two rooms away. These things were never done in person, and said, "I've got some good news for you, Ted. We're shifting you to a new program." "Shifting?" "That's right. We had a talk in here this afternoon, and we decided you were being wasted on the Blood and Guts show. You need more scope for your talents. So we're moving you over to Kitty Time. We think you'll really blossom there. You and Sam Klein and Ed Braggin ought to make a terrific team." Northrop saw Murillo's pudgy face crumble. The arithmetic was getting home. Over here, Murillo was number two, and on the new show, a much less important one. He'd be number three. It was a thumping boot downstairs, and Murillo knew it. The mores of the situation called for Murillo to pretend he was receiving a rare honor. He didn't play the game. He squinted and said, "Just because I didn't sign that old man's amputation? What makes you think 3 years I've been with you? 3 years and you kick me out just like that? I told you, Ted. We thought this would be a big opportunity for you. It's a step up the ladder. It's..." Murillo's fleshy face puffed with rage. "It's getting junked," he said bitterly. "Well, never mind, huh? It so happens I've got another offer. I'm quitting before you can can me. You can take your tenure and..." Northrop blanked the screen. The idiot, he thought. The fat little idiot. Well, to hell with him. He cleared his desk and cleared his mind of Ted Murillo and his problems. Life was real. Life was earnest. Murillo just couldn't take the pace, that was all. Northrop prepared to go home. It had been a long day. At 8 that evening came word that old Gardner was about to undergo the amputation. At 10, Northrop was phoned by the network's own head surgeon, Dr. Steele, with the news that the operation had failed. "We lost him," Steele said in a flat, unconcerned voice. "We did our best, but he was a mess. Fibrillation set in, and his heart just ran away. Not a damned thing we could do." "Did the leg come off?" "Oh, sure. All this was after the operation." "Did it get taped?" "They're processing it now. I'm on my way out." "Okay," Northrop said. "Thanks for calling." "Sorry about the patient." "Don't worry yourself," Northrop said. "It happens to the best of us." The next morning, Northrum had a look at the rushes. The screening was in the 23rd floor studio, and a select audience was on hand. Northrop, his new assistant producer Barton, and a handful of network executives, a couple of men from the cutting room. Slick, bosomy girls handed out intensifier helmets. No mechanicals doing the work here. Northrop slipped the helmet on over his head. He felt a familiar surge of excitement as the electrodes descended, as contact was made. He closed his eyes. There was a thrum of power somewhere in the room as the EEG amplifier went into action. The screen brightened. There was the old man. There was the gangrenous leg. There was Dr. Steele, crisp and rugged and dimple-chinned, the network's star surgeon, $25,000 a year worth of talent. There was the scalpel, gleaming in Steele's hand. Northrop began to sweat. The amplified brainwaves were coming through the intensifier, and he felt the throbbing in the old man's leg, felt the dull haze of pain behind the old man's forehead, felt the weakness of being 80 years old and half dead. Steele was checking out the electronic scalpel now, while the nurses fussed around, preparing the man for the amputation. In the finished tape, there would be music, narration, all the trimmings. But now, there was just a soundless series of images and, of course, the taped brainwaves of the sick man. The leg was bare. The scalpel descended. Northrop winced as vicarious agony shot through him. He could feel the blazing pain, the brief, searing hellishness as the scalpel slashed through diseased flesh and rotting bone. His whole body trembled, and he bit down hard on his lips and clenched his fist, and then it was over. There was a cessation of pain, a catharsis. The leg no longer sent its pulsing message to the weary brain. Now there was shock, the anesthesia of hyped-up pain, and with the shock came calmness. Steele went about the mop-up operation. He tidied the stump, bound it. The rushes flickered out in anticlimax. Later, the production crew would tie up the program with interviews of the family, perhaps a shot of the funeral, a few observations on the problem of gangrene and the aged. Those things were the extras. What counted, what the viewers wanted, was the sheer nastiness of vicarious pain, and that they got in full measure. It was a gladiatorial contest without the gladiators. Masochism concealed as medicine. It worked. It pulled in the viewers by millions. Northrop patted sweat from his forehead. "Looks like we've got ourselves quite a little show here, boys," he said in satisfaction. The mood of satisfaction was still on him as he left the building that day. All day, he'd worked hard, getting the show into its final shape, cutting and polishing. He enjoyed the element of craftsmanship. It helped him forget some of the sordidness of the program. Night had fallen when he left. He stepped out of the main entrance and a figure strode forward, a bulky figure, medium height, tired face. A hand reached out, thrusting him roughly back into the lobby of the building. At first, Northrop didn't recognize the face of the man. It was a blank face, a nothing face, a middle-aged, empty face. Then he placed it. Harry Gardner, the son of the dead man. "Murderer," Gardner shrilled. "You killed him. He would have lived if you'd used anesthetics. You phony, you murdered him so people would have thrills on television." Northrop glanced up the lobby. Someone was coming around the bend. Northrop felt calm. He could stare this nobody down until he fled in fear. "Listen," Northrop said, "we did the best medical science can do for your father. We gave him the ultimate in scientific care. You murdered him." "No," Northrop said, and then he said no more, because he saw the sudden flicker of a slice gun in the blank-faced man's fat hand. He backed away, but it didn't help. because Gardner punched the trigger and an incandescent bolt flared out and sliced through Northrop's belly just as efficiently as the surgeon's scalpel had cut through the gangrenous leg. Gardner raced away, feet clattering on the marble floor. Northrop dropped, clutching himself. His suit was seared, and there was a slash through his abdomen, a burn an eighth of an inch wide and perhaps 4 inches deep, cutting through intestines, through organs, through flesh. The pain hadn't begun yet. His nerves weren't getting the message through to his stunned brain. But then they were, and Northrop coiled and twisted in agony that was anything but vicarious now. Footsteps approached. "Geez," a voice said. Northrop forced an eye open. Murillo. Of all people, Murillo. "A doctor," Northrop wheezed. "Fast! Christ, the pain! Help me, Ted!" Murillo looked down and smiled. Without a word, he stepped to the telephone booth 6 feet away, dropped in a token, punched out a call. "Get a van over here, fast. I've got a subject, Chief." Northrop writhed in torment. Murillo crouched next to him. "A doctor," Northrop murmured. "A needle, at least. Give me a needle, the pain." "You want me to kill the pain?" Murillo laughed. "Nothing doing, Chief. You just hang on. You stay alive till we get that hat on your head and tape the whole thing." "But you don't work for me. You're off the program." "Sure," Murillo said. "I'm with Transcontinental now. They're starting a blood and guts show too, only they don't need waivers." Northrop gaped. Transcontinental? The bootleg outfit that peddled tapes in Afghanistan and Mexico and Ghana and God knew where else? Not even a network show, he thought. No fee. Dying in agony for the benefit of a bunch of lousy tape leggers. That was the worst part, Northrop thought. Only Murillo would pull a deal like that. "A needle! For God's sake, Murillo, a needle!" "Nothing doing, Chief. The van will be here any minute. They'll sew you up, and we'll tape it nice." Northrop closed his eyes. He felt the coiling intestines blazing within him. He willed himself to die, to cheat Murillo and his bunch of ghouls. But it was no use. He remained alive and suffering. He lived for an hour. That was plenty of time to tape his dying agonies. The last thought he had was that it was a damned shame he couldn't star on his own show. Time Junkies by Pedro Iniguez, with music by Fall Precautions, read by the author.
Time Junkies. Bodies slumped outside grungy, crumbling tenements. Brown skin fading into translucence. Molecular degradation. They're becoming as invisible as they feel to a failing nation. "Tell me of those times," they say, "we'll have water and clear skies, shelter and peace and love and..." Searching for a quick fix, they long for utopias glimpsed, for futures that have slipped from their hands like grains of sand. Cross their palms with silver before they fade away. Reassure them today that there'll be no sorrow tomorrow. But they already know, don't they?
this episode of Simultaneous Times, a collaboration with World of If magazine, you heard Contact by Akua Leslie Hope, with music by Fall Precautions. The Pain Peddlers by Robert Silverberg, with music by Fog Machine. And Time Junkies by Pedro Iniguez, with music by Fall Precautions. Theme music by Dane Lescombe. Come visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree or online at spacecowboybooks.com. Don't forget to subscribe and visit us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.